Back together again, you and I chatting it up on Tuesday, May 21st, 2024 on Connecticut Today. We spoke with former Southington GOP State Senator Joe Markley on his recent win in an election law case that made its way all the way to the state Supreme Court. State Senate GOP leader Steve Harding dropped by to talk about a proposed change in the state's contracting laws connected to a case that I also had some thoughts on. And Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio stopped by for her weekly chat. Let's get to a guy. Jeez, I haven't spoken to this gentleman. I found out by going to my message center there in like 4 years. Wow. Former Southington GOP State Senate member Joe Markley, of course, well-known legislator for many years, especially when it came to several issues, including the budget and constitutional issues in Hartford. Also was the lieutenant governor nominee a few years back on the Republican side. Joe Markley, it's Paul here again. Joe, how are you? It's been too long. How you been?
I am terrific, and I'm delighted to be with you. And I've been not completely out of politics, but not making any news. So I haven't minded being on the shelf for a few years. I'm glad to have the chance to talk again.
Excellent. So, Joe, I read the story the other day, and I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that. A case that affected you and a frequent guest of this program, Rob Sampson, that made its way all the way to the Supreme Court, not of the U.S., but the Connecticut Supreme Court, and may have reverberations, Joe, and repercussions on future campaigns in the state. So lay it out for my listeners. Explain what happened.
Well, this goes all the way back to 2014, Paul. Shortly before that election, the State Elections Enforcement Commission put out what they called an advisory opinion that said that under the rules, you have to spend money that's given to you in the Clean Elections Program on your own election, not to promote other candidates. And their interpretation about that, which came up just a few weeks before the election, was that means you can't mention anybody else who's on the ballot. Now, that seems a little severe. I understand what they're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, yeah.
But Rob Sampson and I, we shared territory because he was at that point a state representative within my state Senate district. And we're good friends and we see the world the same way. So we did a lot of mailings together. And in some of those mailings, we said we opposed Malloy's tax hikes or we opposed Malloy's busway or whatever, you know. And according to the State Elections Enforcement Commission, that was promoting the candidacy of Tom Foley, who was Malloy's opponent in 2014. Now, Rob and I both, when we got this notification just before the election, first of all, some of the pieces had already been mailed. Others were printed and ready to go. And we said, well, listen, we don't think it makes sense. We're going to send them out. And we had, in my opinion, Paul, a wonderful defense. We used exactly the same language 2 years earlier when Malloy wasn't on the ballot. So it's obviously in 2012, we weren't promoting Tom Foley. We were just promoting ourselves. And we thought because of Malloy's unpopularity, distinguishing ourselves from his policies was good campaign politics. Well, what happened was we weren't alone. There were, I think, 27 Republican legislative candidates in total who were, you know, accused by the State Elections Enforcement Commission of having improperly used their funds to promote Tom Foley. And basically, they went to them one by one and said, you know, make a deal with us. If you'll say, I'm sorry and I'll never do it again, then we won't take any action against you. And I got to say, Paul, but this would be my brag about it. They got, I guess it was 25 of them to agree. And then there were just two of us left, me and Rob.
Good.
We were the last ones they came to.
Good for you.
We were the toughest nuts. And I will give Rob this much credit. Given the choice between us, they called me. And I talked to them and said, folks, I understand what you're saying. You know, I appreciate the fact that you're reaching out to me, but I don't believe I did anything wrong. And I'm not going to apologize for something that I feel I was justified in doing. And I think I can make a very good case that I was justified in doing. So that started a legal process. That was 2017. We went through an administrative process where the Elections Enforcement Commission fined us. We appealed that into state court. It was kicked out. We went to the Supreme Court. They reinstated it. We went back through the state court process. And finally, our ended up before the state Supreme Court last fall. And thank goodness in all of this, I'll say two things. One, I appreciate if I'm going to be in a fight, the guy I want at my side is Rob Sampson. Mm-hmm. So that was a pleasure. And the second thing is a foundation out of the Washington area called the Institute for Free Speech, which I had contacted, agreed to take this case on.
Excellent.
So for the 7 years,
mm-hmm. Wow.
They've been fighting for us. And we had some great lawyers that were true believers. I mean, they were excited about the case. And when the pleading took place before the Supreme Court last fall, we could tell from the questions that we had a pretty good chance.
So you were able to, just from being there and the oral arguments there and hearing it, you were like, hey, this sounds good for us.
Yes, I have to give credit to Andrew McDonald, a former state senator. We didn't serve together, mm-hmm. But he went into the Malloy administration and then was appointed to the state Supreme Court. And I will say, Rob and I both voted against him when he was appointed to the state Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. But he knows campaigns, having been a candidate himself. And he was rather incredulous about the position of the state, that simply to mention the name of the governor was somehow a promotion of the governor's opponent, who in fact we hadn't mentioned. And I said in one of my flyers, I opposed the Malloy tax increase.
Okay.
And, you know, part of my defense was, the majority of the people in the legislature supported Malloy's tax increase. To support it, to oppose it, it's not necessarily to indict Malloy. It's simply to say, I opposed it. I mm-hmm. didn't say, don't vote for Malloy, Malloy stinks, or any of that sort of thing. So anyways, I think what happened is the Elections Enforcement Commission tried to draw a line way, way far in the wrong direction. In other words, I understand, if I'm raising money to say support Joe Markley for state senate, and then I use it to put out flyers that say vote for Tom Foley.
Sure.
I think but simply to mention the name of the governor, and for a legislator to take a position on the governor's policies, to forbid that really is an infringement on proper political speech during a campaign.
Well, yeah,
and even
Joe, it kind of flies in the face of understanding Joe Markley what a legislator does, because you know these policies by and large emanate from a chief executive. They emanate from the executive branch. So how else are you supposed to phrase it? I don't know. I could be wrong, but really.
I agree. Obviously, I agree 100%. Now, what they kept throwing up at us is, well, you agreed to take this campaign finance money, and you had to sign something that said you'd abide by the law. Mm-hmm. And my argument is, yes, I did. I signed something that said I would abide by statutes and by regulations and by declaratory judgments. What they offered was what they called an advisory opinion. When I testified before the SEC, I said I can't think of two words that are less less powerful than advisory and an opinion. Okay, you gave me your advisory opinion. I don't agree with it. And in fact, we basically at that point you say let's litigate it. And as it turns out, I guess the Supreme Court thinks that I was right and the lawyers at the SEC were wrong in their opinion. Mm. I don't think the Democrats are going to shed too many tears about this. And the reason for that is, in a funny way, in 2014, Dan Malloy was a very unpopular governor, even though he got reelected. Mm-hmm. And the Democrats didn't want him brought into these campaigns because they felt that he hurt the other Democratic candidates. So they said, you can't mention anyone else on a ticket. In 2024, who's going to be at the top of the Republican ticket? Donald Trump.
Yeah, yeah.
I think now Democratic legislative candidates can say, mm-hmm. you know, vote against, let's say, Ryan Fazio and the entire Donald Trump team.
Oh, yeah, sure,
that.
Sure.
You know, so I think that in a certain way, it probably they're not. They'll say now we can take advantage of it in a way we couldn't have otherwise. But I still think it's the right
decision, absolutely.
No matter who it benefits.
Yeah, I agree with you. And Joe, and about the minute and change we have left. So is there going to be an effort now to I don't know, rewrite the document that you folks signed or anybody signs here? Is there any acknowledgement by the SEEC that, okay, we've got to approach this now a little differently, or, hey, we're just going to keep things the way they are, and if somebody complains, they complain?
I think they're going to have to try to come up with a new guideline, and I think a very reasonable guideline could be presented. There's always going to be gray areas, and when there's a gray area, you've got to thrash it out. But you need to draw a line that people can look at and say, that makes sense. And what they drew of saying you simply can't mention other candidates was a ridiculous line.
Got it. Joe Markley, great to speak with you again. Congratulations. You can tell people from now till the end of time, hey, I got a case in my favor, and Rob Sampson did with the state Supreme Court. Joe, thanks. Be good. We'll be in touch, sir. Thank you.
My pleasure. Take care, Paul.
Thanks, Joe. Good to hear from you again. Former Southington GOP State Senate member Joe Markley, a former lieutenant gubernatorial candidate as well, once or so here in the state. And there you go. Steve Harding with us, Republican State Senate leader. Steve, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Paul, good afternoon. Thank you for having me on.
So, Steve, is the governor really going to sign the bonding bill with this little funny business in there by State Rep. Jeff Curry, as I read it? Are we really going to loosen some of these contracting guidelines now? Because, Steve, I look at the governor today, and he's aghast. He can't believe what happened. So what do we – I mean, Steve, this sounds to me like – and correct me if I'm wrong, please. This sounds like alternate universe stuff here. What are we doing here?
It doesn't make any sense. And you know, particularly after what was brought to light over this past week with Mr. Diamantis in terms of – the lack of safeguards that were surrounding what he was doing. And in fact, you know, the habitat in which we as a state government essentially fostered for him to utilize this school construction program as a way for him to make a lot of money off the backs of our taxpayers in a completely fraudulent and illegal and criminal way. It really begs the question of what are we possibly doing by putting in measures that are you know, taking safeguards away and making us more lenient in terms of lack of oversight. It's antithetical, frankly, to everything we should be doing right now, which is implementing further measures to protect the taxpayers' money and to ensure that individuals like Mr. Diamantis are held accountable and there's oversight so that, you know, other individuals out there that would act in that type of manner, which I would hope would be very minimal to no other individual, there would be oversight to prevent those issues from rising.
Now, I know State Representative Curry claims, at least the printed report, Steve, I've read, he says, well, this prohibition against the managers of projects also bidding on subcontracts there, in a sense, wastes money, and it makes oftentimes, or the possibility therein, of cost overruns. Well, okay, I understand that's his contention, but Steve, shouldn't we be debating that change in the law in the light of day, not sticking this into a bonding bill? What am I missing here?
Right. You're not missing anything, and I think, you know, Representative Curry, I know him. We served in the legislature and the House together. I respect him, but and I can see where he's saying that this is, in his opinion, not bad policy. Mm-hmm. I would look at it a little bit differently, obviously. However, you know, I think what the supreme issue here is this, that the Democratic Party in Hartford has had this tendency to pack in all these bills that didn't get public hearings, that didn't have discussions, that weren't provided proper oversight and opinions and getting everyone collaborating in the room together. And what they do is they pack in these implementer bills, whether it be a bonding implementer like here or a budget implementer like we've seen previously. And all these bills that have little to nothing to do with bonding or the budget gets packed into this implementer in the dead of night, last minute before session closes. And it's almost impossible for any legislator to possibly review every single line item or line of that implementer and see what type of stuff gets passed. And you know, this is just, again, a policy the Democrats have essentially constructed over the past few years in Hartford, and it really is a shame because it's an injustice to the people of the state in that their legislators, the individuals, the senators and representatives they send up to represent them in Hartford, do not have the ability to properly digest all these other bills before them in the dead of night as we close session. These should be separate items, to your point, that we have a full-blown discussion and debate on. And I think if we had that on this particular bill, I don't think it would have moved forward for the reasons that I just laid out, particularly with what happened with that indictment just last week.
Absolutely. Steve, before we let you go, a couple of things here. Reports by one of the friends of the program here, Dan Haar from Hearst Connecticut Media. There's a possibility now, I guess, of a special session sometime next month for both the one of the environmental bills and for a bill that's, you know, kind of popular in theory, getting rid of the motor vehicle property tax here. The question that begs there, Steve, is obviously, I'm sure you get this asked a lot by people on both sides of the aisle and your compadres up there. You know, that motor vehicle tax is about $1 billion that goes directly to cities and towns for firemen, men and women, and police and first responders. None of us want to pay that tax. I hate doing it, but how do you make up that money? Everybody says get rid of this, but it's $1 billion. How do you do that?
Yeah, and I think to your point, I think we have to digest and review that in much further length. To your point, you're just shifting the taxes from the motor vehicle now directly onto the residential property. So instead of paying a motor vehicle property tax and then a residential property tax or real property tax, you're going to be paying a larger real property tax. And so I think that needs to be reviewed. I get the onerous aspect of it, and we're kind of one of the few states still left that has a property tax on motor vehicles. So I get the urgency and the want to remove it. But I think we also just need to make sure that we're doing it correctly, and it's just not going to add maybe a potential further cost to your real property tax. Which is some of the highest in the country when you compare it to other states.
Yeah, and Steve.
That's the issue.
Yeah, and finally, Steve, before we wrap up, one thing I did see is, I guess one idea, and you probably entertained this in conversations, one idea is, well, allowing each individual city and town to go away from the, 70% valuation when they do revaluation on property, maybe allow that to be adjusted a little bit, basically to make up for the money. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I think, again, this is all, mathematics that we have to sit down and reflect upon. Like we talked about before, you know, policies in the dead of night is the reason why they don't work. And I think that, this is one of these things where it's so comprehensive that, in terms of changing the math for the appraisal of a property or things like that, is it really just simply shifting the money around? You're paying the same or possibly even more now. And we're just doing nothing more than playing a game of shuffle with where your taxes go. Obviously, if that's the case, then obviously, what's the point in doing that? It should be a comprehensive debate and discussion where we actually do the math, speak with the tax collectors in the town, speak with the first selectmen and mayors, and figure out what works for, most importantly, all of our constituents at a town level and a state level.
Okay, Steve. State Senate Republican Leader Steve Harding of Brookfield. Steve, thank you. Drive safely, and we'll talk down the road. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Talk to you soon.
I appreciate it. Okay, so please explain this to me, because I'm not sure I understand this. Now, Governor Ned Lamont has come out and said, well, he's... You know, and I'm paraphrasing here, he's aghast, astounded, he wants a full investigation here into the whole Costa Diamantis Costa Diamantis scandal, I should say here, former state budget director in a lot of trouble, pleading not guilty on almost 24 counts, 22 counts of bribery, extortion, lying to federal investigators. This all connected, according to the Connecticut Mirror, in a multi-million dollar bid rigging scheme. Of course, most of that money on school construction projects, which are big projects. I mean, you're not building a few outhouses here. You're doing major school construction projects. But yes, at least one member of the governor's own party, the Democratic Party in Hartford, used a little sleight of hand late in the process, late in the bonding and budget process this past month, within a month, 2 weeks ago, to loosen restrictions even further on this stuff. So I don't get it. The governor and other Democrats, oh my God, they're aghast. Oh, pulling their punches, Pilate, washing their hands, saying, hey, this is ridiculous. Yet we still have people in the General Assembly, and whether it's the FOIA laws, the Freedom of Information activity laws, the FOIA request, they want to put further limits on that, or the contracting thing here. It is mind-boggling that we still hear, after years and years and years, whether it's this present administration and the past administration with Mr. Diamantis or the Roland years, it's no wonder we're referred to as Corrupticut. What am I talking about? Again, Connecticut Mirror story here, Andrew Brown. State lawmakers passed a measure. Now, understand how this is done. This was another thing that was sleazy. It wasn't done in the light of day where you or I can get a better grasp on this. It wasn't done with a fully deliberative procedure, as should be done at the General Assembly. Kind of makes you wonder why, huh? Wink, wink. State lawmakers passed a measure in the final hour of the legislative session earlier this month that would roll back a reform that Governor Ned Lamont's office pushed for after the state school construction program became the subject of a federal criminal investigation. Yes, we're talking about the mess right now involving a former legislator, a former top budget guy, Costa Diamantis. One sentence changed in a 254-page bill. It always happens like that. Don't you love how they bury this stuff in a bill that you and I, if we tried to read this stuff overnight, our eyes would glaze over. If the governor signs it into law, it would allow construction managers, the companies that oversee most state building projects, to also bid on the subcontracts for school construction. So in other words, you're opening the door to sleaze. Well, how do you know that? Well, how do I know that? The sun rises in the east and sets in the west. The Pope is Catholic and a bear, yes, in the woods. That type of contracting, which is frequently referred to as self-performance, was advocated by, oh, what a shock, Costa Diamantis, the former director of the state school construction office, who's now in a boatload of trouble. Officials at the Department of Administrative Services lobbied lawmakers 2 years ago in 2022 to ban construction managers from building parts of the school projects they were leading. They argued, quite properly, says here in the Connecticut Mirror, that it created a disadvantage for other companies seeking to perform work. The vast majority of school building projects in Connecticut are managed by a small group of construction companies. I wonder, this is me talking now and not Andrew Brown of the Connecticut Mirror. I want to make that clear. And which you start to wonder, you say, construction companies, yeah, union companies, yeah, Democrats, campaign contributions. State lawmakers passed the changes the DAS requested in 2022 as part of an annual budget bill. But State Rep. Jeff Curry, Democrat, East Hartford. Remember that name. State Representative Jeffrey Curry, Democrat of East Hartford, inserted a last-minute repeal of the contracting rules into that bonding bill a couple of weeks ago. Jeff Curry, by the way, is the son of former Department of Administration Services Commissioner Melody Curry. Wait a minute. Well, hold on a second here. I'm not making any allegations here, but understand what's going on here. You have a guy who is now under indictment for sleaze, millions of dollars, maybe tens, hundreds of millions of dollars of contracting sleaze here. Now, because a lot of people follow along here, follow the bouncing ball, do your best Mitch Miller here. That's old school. So because this guy was allegedly involved in sleaze, the Department of Administrative Services lobbied lawmakers in 2022. This is Ned Lamont's own DAS. They lobbied the General Assembly and say, okay, you know what? Make this change. Ban construction managers from building parts of the projects they're already working on. In other words, kind of double dipping. Right. Let some other, contractors bid on this. And you're saying, well, yeah, that makes sense. So it was passed as part of the annual budget bill back in 2022, but in a last second late frame repeal or an attempt to repeal, a line was put in a bonding bill getting rid of that safeguard. Who put the line in? Democrat State Representative Jeff Curry of East Hartford. By the way, Jeff Curry is the son of Melody Curry, who was a former commissioner of the Department of Administrative Services. Yes, the same DAS that begged the legislature to put the safeguard in there the first time. I'm not making any of this up. So you have a department telling the General Assembly 2 years ago, put this rule in, it'll eliminate sleaze. And now, in a way to do this without really seeing the regular budgetary process, the son of a former DAS commissioner puts in a little tweak there to eliminate it. Can you be any more shifty? But the governor, and the Democrats are like, oh, but by the way, you know, a lot of Democrats haven't really said anything on this, but the governor is outraged. So why did he do this? He thinks, Jeff Curry believes, to remove, and I'm sorry, it's hard not to laugh at this. Jeff Curry thinks, and I'm just going by what, I don't know the man, I've never met him. He could walk in this studio now and I have no idea who he is. I'm just trying to absorb this story as a regular Connecticut taxpayer would. Jeff Curry, again, whose mom used to run DAS, longtime legislator to Melody Curry, what a shock. He argued he wanted to remove the restrictions on construction managers because he thinks, he's not sure about this now, he thinks it would save money on school building projects. He told the Connecticut Mirror, quote, we're trying to contain costs when it comes to school construction. And I think that this is one of the ways in which you can do that. He pointed out the construction managers would still be required to submit public bids in order to win the contracts. Okay. And that means what? Does that mean they're still going to get or not get the work? And here's the laughable part of this. He argued that local school officials and school building committees would protect against construction managers potentially taking advantage of the setup. Oh, please stop, Jeff. He said, quote, I think there's enough safeguards there to ensure that there's nothing that may wind up being out of compliance with the statute. Is he crazy? With all due respect, I never met the guy. He says this stuff with a straight face. After the department that his mother ran when she was a well-known state legislator and state department head pushed for this. Now, the question begs. Hello, question. Let me beg something. Okay. The question begs. And I'm not in any way, shape, or form alleging anybody or accusing anybody of anything. But you have to ask yourself, why would he do this? And again, if you want to make this change, and let me give him the benefit of the doubt. All right, maybe this change would in fact save money. Why are you inserting it in one line in a budget bill at the end of the session and not saying anything unless you're questioned on it? This reeks of sleaze, and it reeks of, and excuse me for my French here, but the balls of this to be introduced now as a repeal. As we're looking at the guy being indicted who was the main driving force by some legislators to put this in the first time, I don't get it. Well, I do. I do. I really do. I mean, this is absolutely maddening here that at a time where we have a high profile former legislator innocent till proven guilty. I understand that. Mr. Diamantis deserves his day in court or his consultation with attorneys. I'm sure that's going on right now with the feds and the state and all that. But even as this goes on, we have a little bit of a shifty, backhanded way to get rid of further oversight here. Oh, because the oversight may end up costing more. Well, do we know that or not? See, this is another thing. Whenever anybody says, well, we don't need these safeguards, why is that? Well, you know, Paul, they could cost too much. Oh, really? Do we have evidence of that? No, but they could end up costing too much. Oh, so that leaves you less money to donate to Democrats from the unions. Is that what we're driving at here? Could that be it? Mm-hmm. This time of the week, every Tuesday, Megan Portfolio joins us. She writes the Hartford Portfolio blog at the Yankee Institute. Megan, how are you? Good afternoon. Are you still watching CTN or have you stopped?
Oh, I'm always watching, Paul. I'm watching it all. And what? Come on, man. Being all mean to that Joe Biden.
Oh, my God. It's just, you know, please stop being condescending. Just deliver the speech. And Hillary did it, too. And everything. You remember her with the hot sauce? You remember that thing?
It triggered me. I was so embarrassed I couldn't watch the whole thing.
Yeah, because I had a caller last hour. I said, you remember the hot sauce? And I guess he had forgotten it. Yeah, she was campaigning somewhere at some, you know, soul food restaurant or something. And son of a gun, she just happened to have a bottle of hot sauce.
Oh, I mean, who doesn't, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Make it stop. Anyway, what are you keeping your eyes on that my listeners should know about?
Oh, so just a little sneak peek. Mm-hmm, sneak peek already for the 2025 legislative session, because this is what they do. Session ends and they get to work, the activists and the environmentalists. They have plans for next session if they get elected. So I guess we'll start with my favorite, Christine Palm.
Okay.
Who I think she actually might be more triggered by the striking workers bill than I am.
All right.
Because of the striking workers bill and how it was called at the last minute, her environmental bill wouldn't get called. Mm-hmm. She accused Martin Looney of squandering time, and that because of that, her bill couldn't pass. And she also took a little jab at Looney, which I guess because she's not running again, so she can do whatever she wants now. So I guess Looney said somewhere that the striking workers bill was good and humane. And she was like, yeah, good and humane for striking workers, but not humane and not good for the 3.6 million Connecticut residents who are not on strike. And I was like, oh my God, I agree with Christine Palm.
You know, I did see that. And one of my other guests, in fact, he's on Wednesdays, Dan Haar from Hearst, he kind of pointed that out to me too on the fact that some people, not a lot of them, Megan, but some people in the Democratic leadership, you know, despite what you would think, are not like Uber greenies. You know what I mean? I mean, they'll say the right things, but as you just said, when it came down to Bill A or Bill B, we see where Marty Looney sided.
Well, I mean, there's extremists on both sides of the aisle, but I mean, there is this pocket of like moderate Dems, moderate Republicans. Mm-hmm. I know some people call them rhinos or dinos, but they at least sometimes listen to the people. And I mean, the people came out against the gas car ban, the TCI. Yeah. I mean, we have been very vocal, and it's actually very interesting to live in Connecticut. It's such a blue state, and the blue states around us end up passing this stuff. And because mm-hmm. of our awesome activists on our side fighting back and fighting the man with these bad policies, we keep killing all of these bad ideas. And I'm so proud of, the citizens here in Connecticut that stand up for themselves. It makes me so proud. Every time we defeat one piece of bad legislation, I'm so proud of everyone.
Especially with this, a lot of this environmental stuff, Megan, because I've always said it's not that people don't want to be environmentally conscious, but I think they're willing for the market to take its forces. And again, we see much more environmental lighting this, in this age now, better home appliances. If EVs got cheaper with more charging options, people will generally gravitate to them. They don't want to be forced, Megan, right? They don't want to be told you have to.
And you know what? I had a meltdown over this last weekend when I was mowing the lawn because I have a battery-powered lawn mower.
See? Look at you!
Died on me midway.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, this is why I am never getting a battery car. I'll get one of those hybrids.
Yeah.
I like the hybrids.
Yeah, get a hybrid. There you go. So, I read your piece and I've been reading some other pieces. So what is the environmental lobby? What are they, what's in the crosshairs, if you will, for the long session, which will then, of course, come after another round of elections for the State House and State Senate? What are their goals here?
Okay, so there's three things that are, I would bet money on this with the DraftKings that we will see. And the Green Monster will be back. I don't know mm-hmm. in what form, if it's going to be in the original obnoxious, offensive, costly to Connecticut households form or the like watered down form, but that's definitely coming back. The Green Amendment is definitely coming back. And that's basically, the environment is a right and it gives people the ability to sue over the environment, which is a little scary. And it's been around in a couple of states for a few decades, mm-hmm. but it's starting to pick up steam in other states. And it's interesting because people are starting to use it, use it to sue. Some of them I've seen are a little reasonable, like landfills, but
sure.
the people are suing. Other people have been using it to fight New York City, there was a lawsuit against a developer that wanted to build these huge sky rises for residential living. I think they ended up losing. I don't know where that stands in the court right now, but that's one to watch because, be creative. You can sue for anything. The transportation sector is polluting the environment. So we're going to sue. Who are we going to sue? And you know how it is nowadays. Everyone wants to sue. So that's definitely 100% coming back.
Okay.
The one that is very interesting, it was Christine Cohen, Senator Cohen.
Yeah.
She started talking about a carbon budget. And she didn't go into much detail. It was one of those, you guys are hearing it first. you know, I've been working on this carbon budget.
Uh-huh.
So essentially that just means, you know, we have to keep emissions at a certain level to maintain a certain temperature, because if we go over that temperature,
then what happens?
You know, the Earth's going to, you know, explode.
How much is it going to cost? If we go over that, how much are they going to charge me? That's what I want.
You know, that's another thing, you know, that this, with these other bills that they want to do, they can all like work. They're all like little pieces that can work together and just literally make up anything and they can do it. What concerns me with the carbon budget is that in the beginning of this Zoom call, she had actually brought up TCI. She was one of the lead proponents of TCI. Like, she cannot get TCI off the brain. And she was trying to console Christine Palm about, you know, because it's been 2 years where the environmentalists have, they did pass like a PFAS thing, which was a good bill, and some invasive species. That was another good bill. But they're like radical bills. They have not been able to get across the finish line.
Yeah.
And so she was consoling Christine. She's like, "You know what it feels like, you know, with the whole PCI thing."
Well,
and
you
I'm
know,
like, oh my God,
group hug. Now, you know, Megan, the thing with TCI was, did I remember correctly that even those notorious right-wingers at the Sierra Club, even they came out and said, hey, it's well-intentioned, but there's no guarantee the money is going to go toward, ding, 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 the environment. I remember that.
I can't remember. It was one of the far-left environmental
groups.
In the very beginning, they did come out. We actually, someone at Yankee reported on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, they came out and said, you know, it's racist because it's not going to go to where, you know, you're saying it's going to go. But she started off the conversation dropping the TCI bomb. And then she goes into this carbon budget. I'm like, she can't get it out of her head. She wants some kind of gas tax. That's my speculation. I don't take that to the bank.
Okay.
But this carbon budget, we're going to start hearing about it. You know, we won't hear about it. They're going to talk about it, you know, behind closed doors, unless I can, like, you know, find it.
All right.
So, you know, it's on, like, this meeting's on CTN, so I was able to see it.
So keep that in mind, folks, the carbon budget. And the other one you mentioned, the amendment, you know, that would be in the Constitution. Is that going to be on the ballot come November or not?
No. So it has failed, I believe, 2 years in a row. It did not pass. So, God, you're going to make me... Let's see. So for an amendment, it either has to get like 2/3 majority in both houses.
Yeah.
And if it does, it goes on the ballot. If it doesn't, it has to go through another round of votes in the General Assembly. And then it just needs a simple majority. And then it goes on the ballot. So, I mean, we have some time, but this is something we don't want. Like, if we don't, and I don't mean to speak for the people, but I mean, people, they didn't want TCI. They didn't want tolls. They didn't want, you know, gas carbon. They're not going to want this. So, I mean, we need to be active. We need to make sure we're still in contact with the lawmakers. I mean, they're out of session, but they still get their emails and they're, you know, they still take phone calls. We just have to be on them and be like, we don't want this.
All right.
Because they are like going full steam ahead. Their session did not end. Like, they had a couple hours of sleep. They woke up and they got to work. That's what, you know, we need to do.
Okay. So the two words we have to watch for are carbon what again?
Carbon budget, unless they like hear me talking about this and they come up with another way to, so they tend to do that. They keep like rebranding things, but it's the same thing. Right now it's called carbon budget, so be on the lookout.
It's like the halcyon days of General Motors, the same car, but it was different if it was a Buick or a Chevy or an Oldsmobile or a Pontiac or whatever. All right, carbon budget. Megan Portfolio, check it out, the Hartford Portfolio at theyankeeinstitute.org. Megan, thanks, and we'll chat next week. Thanks.
Have a good week.
All right, thanks. Megan Portfolio there. Check out the Hartford Portfolio, her blog at yankeeinstitute.org.